So this idea that emotions will often have a motivational aspect to them. They want something to happen. And at a minimum, sometimes emotions are a means by which people communicate with each other. And many, many emotions are communicated through facial expressions. And you can kind of tell when someone's angry versus someone's happy by what's happening in their face. And you can tell from the look people have whether they're a threat sometimes or whether they're safe to be with. And I wouldn't be surprised if part of the reason human emotions developed over time was easy way of communication without having to go through a long explanation of, what you want or what's going on. That it also means that it's an example of all these little micro muscles that come into play when emotions are present. That sometimes we don't even know they're there, and some people can see in our faces what we're feeling before we can ourselves, because so much can be expressed there. And now it's particularly strong, I think, to recognize that reactive emotions are reacting to something, and usually they're reacting in order to accomplish something for, to there's a motivation built into them. So if there's fear to something, that's usually a motivation to become free or safe from the danger. And so there's kind of a built-in idea, maybe to withdraw or to free somehow, to be some come safe or so, I don't know. Anger is it can be a reactive emotion, and we want to push something away, we want to defend ourselves. And reactive emotions are often, we often say in English that there's a trigger inside for them. And what's sometimes happens is that we live in states of reactivity, meaning that we live in states that have been triggered in the past by our life events, by our beliefs, by our attitudes, by our desires and fears. And in these reactive modes of being, we can be more sensitive, more capable to be triggered again to further reactivity. So if I go around being anxious all the time, then a car backfires in the street, and I immediately recoil because I'm kind of poised to be even more afraid. Whereas if I had a really nice nap and nice lunch and feel happy and safe and contented and just kind of delighted, that loud noise might not startle me because it's not encountering the fear body that I'm walking around in this tightened way. So if we walk around in a reactive mode, we're setting ourselves up to react even more. And sometimes it's generations of living that way. And I think there's a lot of people who live their lives in a reactive mode all the time. They don't know any different. It's constantly reacting to what's happening and then reacting to their own reactions, and the reactions they have are setting up the conditions for further reactions. And it's all kind of business as usual. It feels completely normal to be that way. Reactive emotions, the source of them has, is often our beliefs, the constructs of the mind, our memories, evaluations, our predictions of what's going on. I might predict that there's some danger down the street, and then live with that prediction. But then it turns out that my prediction was wrong, and there's no danger there at all. And so it involves a kind of constructed effort sometimes, mind thinking, planning, making things up, imagining. Some of these reactive emotions have to do with survival. When we need to have reactive emotions to react quickly enough to become safe. Sometimes we don't want to have time to think about whether to close the door on the mountain lion that's about to jump on us from outside. You always want to close that door without, you know, any analysis. And so, you know, so we have this capacity to react quickly. We also have the capacity to run away quickly, to run for safety if things are dangerous for us. And these modes of reactivity that respond very, very quickly, maybe before the mind has a chance even to think, is probably one of the reasons why you're alive today, because someone back over the last 1,000 generations or 10,000 generations before you had those instincts and probably stayed out of danger because of it. So it's a kind of a useful thing. For the Buddha, there's a different source for emotions, a different source of seeing the world, evaluating the world, considering how we live. That in the mindfulness practice, he calls the first feelings of the flesh. So I kind of think of that being a little bit on the surface of our lives. So, you know, surface of our body, because the flesh is where the muscles are that have to react quickly. The other is the Buddha calls mindfulness practice not of the flesh. So what does that mean? And this means things which are generated, arise, emerge within us without any of the five sense doors stimulated. It's not because we saw something, heard something, smelled something, tasted something, or were touched by something. It's something that happens from the inside out and without any conditions in the world being a trigger for it. And this is something that happens for meditation, because you're sitting quietly, closing your eyes. And as we settle in, we get concentrated and quiet, there's space for some other kind of emotions, feelings, sense of well-being, calm, peace, to begin emerging. But that's not emerging from the surface apparatus that's required for survival, or the surface kind of world of reactivity that we get caught up in, reaction after reaction. And so in some places, Buddha calls it not of the flesh. Other places, he has the expression, the mental life that emerges from, and literally the word that he gives is the womb, yoni. And the yoni, the womb, is maybe in English, maybe we more likely say from the heart, maybe, rather than from the mind or reactivity, but from deep in our organs. But the womb is this generative place something is generated from the inside out. It grows, it develops from the inside out, as opposed to reactivity, which is a response to the external world, kind of, and what's happening. And also a response to the mind that makes things up, imagining things. The growth of a baby is not made up in the womb. I mean, as a mental construct. And so the Buddha identifies this place within that can be a source for generative emotions, generating a certain kind of emotions and feelings and attitudes. That's a very different source than from the reactive mind, the imagining mind, conceiving mind. But that deeper source is not automatic. It's easily covered over by the reactive mode, the reactive source. This generative source is a source that there's not any conceit there. There's not any ego there. There's not, whereas the egotism, self-centeredness, idea of me, myself, and mine, from the Buddhist point of view, that's all generated by the surface mind. That's generated by the mind that makes up stories and ideas. And then we live in those stories and ideas. And so to have these, to let the constructing mind, the storytelling mind, quieting down so that we can start listening or feeling into this deeper generative source within, from the womb, from deep within, deeper than the muscles, you know, maybe deep in the torso. Probably each person will identify a different place where this other source is, but that it's something emerges that is not something you can make happen. It's not something you can will. It's not something you can, you know, call on demand. And it's not something that you can kind of clearly identify, you know, this is me doing it. It's rather we create the conditions where something can gestate, where something can, a seed can be nurtured and grow. And for this second way of being, not of the flesh, this emotional life that can come alive from practice, that something deeper inside begins to grow, the Buddha uses a lot of metaphors from nature of growth, like a seed. There's a seed, and that seed can grow. Things can flower. Things can come to fruit, to fruition. He talks about cultivation, and it's like a cultivating a plant. The word for practice in Pali, in English, we talk about the word practice a lot. What are your practice? We might ask each other. What's your practice? And, or I practice meditation, or I practice loving kindness, or what meditation practice do you have? Or it's time to practice. We use that word a lot. The comparable word in the same with that kind of refers to more or less the same thing in the ancient language is bhavana, B-H-A-V-A-N-A, which many people will translate as cultivate, but it can also mean generate, to let something generative arise, to grow. It can also mean to grow. So rather than the practice being you cultivating something, making something happen, it's you're allowing something to grow, you're nurturing something to grow from within. And so it requires a little bit stepping away from the self-centered orientation that I think from the Buddhist point of view belongs to the reactive mind. From the Buddhist point of view, it belongs to the mind of making things up, of who we are and what we are and all this, in a way that causes a tremendous amount of suffering for people. But to do this radical shift from one source inside to another is the movement on the path to liberation. And so here again, there's a distinction being made as we look at our emotions between those that belong to the reactive world and those that belong to the generative world. Those that emerge, those we make space for, those that grow, those that flow, like there's a wellspring inside that gets opened, and it feels like there's a flow of something that begins to move through us. And some of the things of this flow have to do with calm, with peace, with happiness, with joy, with wisdom, with sometimes there's a association of this yoni, this womb-like place, is a place of a certain kind of reflection or contemplation that's maybe very different than the kind of contemplation that's, reactive or neurotic or filled with fear or filled with desires and self-centeredness. Some deeper wellspring. So as we practice, as we learn to identify emotions and be present for them, part of the value of that mindfulness of emotions is, as I said earlier, is to be able to distinguish between those which are skillful and not skillful, those that are nourishing and not nourishing. It's also helpful because with time, we begin to identify the source from which these things are coming from. And if they're coming from reactivity or from greed, hate, and delusion, or coming mostly from survival instincts of fight and flight and freeze, then that's one kind of source that in the long term is not so skillful, not so helpful. It's in the long term, it's exhausting, it's stressful. And there's another place that, some people say the opposite of fight and flight is approach and nurture. So the nurturing of something, the nurturing of a life inside of us, coming from the womb, the nurturing, joy, well-being, peace, a heightened sensitivity, empathy, compassion, all these things that you can't exactly manufacture, you can't force, but you can settle and open up and have this deeper sensitivity kind of appear. And so what does that require of us? I think it requires a little bit learning to get out of the way. It requires trusting that there's something deeper than the reactive mind. Trusting something deeper than giving in to unskillful, unhelpful feelings like impatient, boredom, and irritation, and revenge, and resentment, and even things like anxiety and fear we often give into too easily. And we're not giving into or react by simply because we like something or don't like it, or it's we're caught in the desire for pleasant and the avoidance of the unpleasant. So many of the ways in which we live and the kind of emotions and feelings that come from it cover over this deeper wellspring inside. So learning to identify that, and that's something that comes, I think, for many people with doing regular practice, regular spiritual practice, probably almost any spiritual practice, I'd like to believe, and done regularly, it begins to change a person, settle a person, open a person up so that these deeper wellsprings of well-being and motivation that's within us can begin to flow. So I don't know if we can do a meditation that works just to kind of call upon this generative source within, but maybe we can try to do something. And maybe if you follow the guidance I give, even if you just imagine it, maybe that's enough to maybe get a feel for this possibility. So let's begin a meditation. To take some care with the posture that you're going to sit in. Maybe there's a posture, maybe the way you sit can have a sense of ease in it, easeful posture. Falling upon a sense of ease that's not ambitious, that has some degree of trust or faith in the goodness of sitting here quietly, with the intention to be present and available for our inner life to show itself. Then to gently take a few long, slow, deep breaths. Maybe imagining that as you breathe in deeply, the breathing begins deep within in this generative source. And with a deep inhale, something grows and spreads and expands through your torso. And on the inhale, it all returns and settles back into that generative source within, relaxing, opening up, relaxing, settling. Then your breathing return to normal. And if it's possible to have a global awareness of your body in whatever way that is easy for you. Maybe it's mostly throughout the torso. Maybe it's wider. And this global awareness of the body, imagining it has lots of room to hold all your feelings and emotions. Emotions and feelings occur within this broad global body. This broad body breathes in, out. Where breathing is like an expansion and a contraction. Massage-like movement of a jellyfish expanding and contracting as it moves through the water. Within this global body that's breathing, can you identify the place where things feel the calmest, where the most peaceful for you? Doesn't have to be that peaceful or calm, but where it's most peaceful and calm within. Imagining that the breathing breathes with this peaceful place. Breathes through it. And as you exhale, quieting the thinking mind, the thinking mind become calmer. Coming into a kind of harmony with this quiet, peaceful place within. Finding the peaceful, calm place within. Even if it's just a hint. Is there any feeling of goodness or well-being associated with this place within that's peaceful and calm? Some feeling of rightness, being connected to it, breathing with it, settling into it. Opening it. Is there anything that's pleasant within, associated with some inner source of calm or peace, of goodness? Anything that feels pleasant, however mild? If so, feel the pleasantness, letting the thinking mind become quiet, sensing and feeling a quiet, pleasant place within. Perhaps maybe you can feel how the following list of emotions are not things that you make happen, but they somehow emerge and spread, glow through the body, radiate when they're there. Maybe peace itself, calm. Contentment. Confidence. Sense of well-being. Happiness. Passion. A feeling of inner safety. Feeling of being home. Embodied feeling of being at home with oneself, in oneself. All these possibilities exist within us, either as seeds that have not yet germinated, or as seedlings or small plants that are growing. With what care, with what love or goodwill, you contribute the conditions to let all these seeds grow. How do you connect to this inner source within to nourish it, make room for it? Is there a way of putting aside any self-centeredness? Self-concern, self-preoccupation. Just allowing. The deepest of the deep within to be the support and the reference for all that goes on for you. You're sitting here. Do you have any sense of or intuition of a generative source inside? Within that's radically different. And the reactive mode. The neurotic mode, the self-centered mode. The storytelling mode. What intuition, what sense do you have? A generative source within. Every exhale, letting go of your thoughts and letting the inhale fill this generative place within. As we bring this meditation to a close, spend a couple of minutes now thinking about, reflecting on, if you have any sense of it, this inner generative place, if it has a role for your life. Does it have a place? Is there a time and place where it's useful? Is it something that you value? How might it support you as you find your way?